This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. I'm your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. We are bringing back this pod, and I am so stoked to be doing this pod and just to discuss Dynasty and hopefully impart some useful knowledge to you all. Even though I am dealing with some allergies that are hitting me hard right now, we're going to power through and we're going to get a quality pod out to y'all. So before I get into some of the topics, I want to first discuss how I do my Dynasty evaluations, as I think that will kind of frame how I end up discussing these players and these topics going forward and in the future. So there are advanced metrics that I look at, and I'm definitely a fan of using stats to evaluate players in fantasy. Steal rates, block rates, rebounding rates, how a player performs on, you know, field goal percentage in isolation versus spot up field goal percentage and much others. Those are all stats I look at. But I do think we need to impact some evaluations and forecast how these players will actually be on the court in real life, if they will develop into starters, if they have the potential to be starters or stars, or if they're just going to project in a backup role. So it's kind of marrying those two together, the real life analysis and the fantasy analysis. Because if I don't think a player can really be good enough to garner, you know, usage and minutes, and really that's the two key fantasy stats for production is usage and minutes, then I just don't see that player ever being that useful for me from a fantasy perspective. And I think a really great recent example of that is Alexei Pokusevski, who was recently waived by the Thunder, now in the Hornets. You know, he was someone who had great per-minute stats and looked really flashy in those, but I just never really saw an NBA rotation player there. Now, he still could be an NBA rotation player, but, you know, his upside that some were saying were, you know, oh, if he sees starter level minutes and he has good rebounding rates, good passing rates, et cetera, et cetera. But I just never saw him being strong enough defensively or good enough on ball to really dictate those minutes or usage. And I think we've seen that play out in the past couple of years. So in a nutshell, that's how I tend to do my dynasty analysis and how I frame discussion of these players is using eye tests, watching a lot of games, but then also checking advanced stats, marrying those together, and then forming a full picture and a full almost forecast and projection of prospects and players where I think they'll fit into the NBA. So with that, let's go into our first topic, which will be kind of recent trends or topics I've seen in the NBA lately, and I just want to either discuss or harp on. So think now that we're getting into the beginning of March, silly season is really kicking off for some teams, namely the Grizzlies, the Blazers, and the Hornets. But there will be others that we see. We'll start seeing some phantom injuries crop up. Maybe not phantom injuries, but we can call it rest, injury management, whatever label these teams put it. So we're going to see some just crazy stat lines from players who maybe we haven't heard of, or maybe we heard of and thought they faded away. But I think it's very important to note with these that there's a baseline of counting stats in any NBA game. What I mean by counting stats are points, boards, and assists. Someone is going to shoot shots on a team. Someone's going to make those shots at some rate. Could be good, could be bad. Someone is going to grab those misses and get the rebounds. It just happens in a game. someone is going to pass, X player will pass the ball to Y player, they will put up a shot, and they will get assist. It doesn't matter who's playing in an NBA game, there will always be some points, boards, and assist. So someone like Trey Mann, who we'll discuss a little more later, but he's going to see some good counting stats. It's just going to be the case as he's getting about 30 minutes a game for the Hornets and looks set to be their starting point guard for the rest of the season. Does this mean that I'm going to project him like producing these stats going forward? No, probably not. But what we can glean from the silly season on these teams is skill improvement. Are these players showing the ability to be, I guess, stay at this level going forward or be a serious NBA contributor? So, getting back to Trey Mann, is his self-creation going to be real? Has that improved to a point where he is worth playing in a rotation at a greater load than we've seen in the past? And can his defense hold up for that to be the case? He's a really small guard, honestly. Looks just kind of like Tyler Herro-ish, where with Tyler Herro-ish with less wingspan and almost less bulk. And if he can't hold up physically, it's just going to be tough to play him, unless his self-creation and his offensive passing is that strong. And maybe that is the case. Maybe he's good enough on the offensive end, you take some of those defensive warts. But that's sort of the things we're looking for. Along with the silly season, we're going to see some high draft picks start getting their chances. You know, we've already seen Brandon Miller take a greater load on the Hornets, and I think he's looked really solid. You know, is he going lights out, shooting points per game? No, it's not crazy. But he's doing it pretty passively. He's pretty much at average efficiency on play types across the board, which is actually really hard for a rookie to do. I don't want to understate that because that seems really simple on a surface level and not that interesting. But being league average as a rookie is really promising and really encouraging. So Brandon Miller has impressed me, honestly, this season. And I hope to see some more development, especially in his pick and roll and ball handling game as the silly season progresses. We've also seen other draft picks like Taylor Hendricks, Kobe Bufkin, and Grady Dick start seeing some more minutes in the rotation. Some of this is due to trade deadline moves, some of it's due to injuries, but seeing these intriguing prospects from a fantasy perspective pre-draft start to see some more time, I think it's going to be vital to see if they can hold up in an NBA rotation. We'll touch on Taylor Hendricks later, so I'm not going to go into detail now. But Kobe Bufkin, with Trae Young's injury, has kind of become that now backup guard. And I think his on-ball game has been a little lackluster so far. Granted, I don't think he's really gotten the opportunity to show too much. But his defense is actually impressed. I think he's, you know, maybe at not an oversized for a two-guard, but at a decent size with good length. And he's gotten around screens nicely, stuck to other guards pretty well. And I've liked the flashes I've seen. And I think that's going to give him the ability to at least stick in an NBA rotation as his combo guard, which means he can be kind of multifaceted and do a lot of different things, kind of Derek White-ish in a sense. I'm not saying he is Derek White or going to develop like that, but that sort of player who can mesh in with different lineup configurations is very valuable and usually sees a role in the NBA. And Grady Dick, he started the season insanely cold from deep, which was his calling card, and that was really worrisome for me, at least. I thought, you know, I rated him as one of the best movement shooters in this draft class, so to see him struggle from there was worrying, as you thought that would be the skill that would translate. He got sent to the G League, actually shot pretty poorly there too, but he's kind of turned it on the past month or so, and I mean, it's been on some really, honestly, outlier percentages on the high end, but maybe we see that level off. We see some consistent run. I've liked how he's competed. He has looked frail and a little undersized on his defense. That was a bit of a con for him in pre-draft. But I think he's showing that he's deserving of a longer look, at least in an NBA rotation. And I think he can get enough rebounds and steals where he's more than just a threes and points guy in fantasy leagues. Touching on another high draft pick, Scoot Henderson, in his development. He's been a little in and out of the lineup due to injury, and that goes with some of these maybe phantom injuries or the Blazers just taking it easy and resting players. But hopefully he can play some, and we can see some of those lead ball handler abilities. I think he's honestly impressed me from what I've seen so far. I think, yeah, the shots necessarily haven't gotten in at a great rate, but I think his form and his pull-up jumper especially actually looks pretty decent, and it's just a matter of when the ball goes in. I think he is getting to his spots pretty well, and honestly, I'm seeing what I want to see. He's a young rookie point guard, and he's going to have his struggles. That just happens. And then moving on to the Grizzlies in silly season, they're having plenty of, you know, even 10-day guys rotating through two-way players. The risk in the season names that frankly aren't going to be long-term investments, but I think the two I want to touch on are Santi Aldama and Gigi Jackson. Gigi Jackson just recently signed a new contract, or I guess rather had his two-way contract converted to an NBA contract for the team, and I'm interested to see if he can do more than just score. His pre-draft profile was essentially a gunner and someone who needed to expand his game probably a little fuller to stick in the NBA, but I think we're seeing some shades of that, and some of this on-ball creation ability, whether it be his burst getting past a man or using his physicality, I think has shown himself. So there are some very encouraging flashes from him. And touching on Santi Aldama, I really like his mix of his length, his size, his touch, and his ball skills as a big. He hasn't really shown that all together yet or consistently, but if he can kind of get that more together and show that all in one package, that makes for a very fun fantasy player. So he's kind of disappointed me of late, but I'm hoping he can turn it on a little bit as the season progresses. Getting into our next topic, these will be players on the upswing. So these are players, could be over the season, could be over the past couple games, over the past couple weeks, that I've seen something new from and have thus I have a higher opinion of or a higher ranking of than I did previously. So the first player I want to talk about is Jonathan Kuminga. And this has been over more of the past month. You know, he is someone who is oozed with potential with his athletic skills and his physical profile ever since he was drafted 7th by the Warriors, I believe, back in, that was 2020. And he hasn't really seen a consistent rotation role since then. And he actually complained about his role on January 5th. Normally, a player that complains about his role, and as a third-year player who hasn't necessarily shown all too much, that normally means you're not going to see a greater role. However, since he complained about his role, he's averaging about 30 minutes per game. That was up from 22.5 previously. And he's averaging about 20 points, 6 boards, 3 assists, 56% from the field on 14 attempts per game. Previously, he was at 9.5 attempts per game from the field. And those are all really strong, encouraging numbers. That's good scoring, some boards, some assists, and really strong percentage from the field on high volume. 56% from the field, that is nothing to sneeze at. However, I do think it's important to note that his threes were low, just under 1 made per game. And his steals and blocks were, they're okay, but they're not anything too special. They're a little under 1 steal and block per game each. So you would like to see a little bit more of the defensive flashes. The eye test, though, has been very encouraging to me. He is playing within himself and his capabilities, and utilizing that athletic physical profile with that burst and speed to really power to the rim and generate easy rim looks, which are the best shot in the game. You know, there's all the talk about the three-ball revolution, but really the rim look and getting to the rim is the best look in the game still. And he's actually lowered his volume from three. Pre that January 5th timeline when he complained, he was averaging 2.6 threes per game, but now he's at 2.0 threes per game post January 5th. So to me, that says, okay, he's playing more minutes and yet taking less threes per game. He's recognized that that's not where his strength is currently, and really going all in into, I am a powerful, strong, athletic player who can get to the rim relatively at will and just live at the rim, which is great to see. I think that actually is more encouraging to his future prospects than if he were just trying to bomb threes or do more playmaking. I think with his play recently, he's earned more trust from Kerr. He's able to play through smaller mistakes here and there. And Kuminga has earned himself a rotation role, not just a rotation role, really, a starting role going forward. And then as he
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof, massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
Works through his flaws. He can maybe then develop them a little bit. Maybe we can see some more assists in the future. We can see him be a little bit more active in the defensive game and get some more steals or blocks. But I think at the very least, he's a secured starter and has a very bright future going forward. Second player I want to discuss in that, players on the upswing, is Jalen Williams. And the Thunder have really been an ascendant team and just fully come out this year announcing themselves as a contender. And yes, I do say contender. I think they're a really good team. And, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander gets a lot of the talk on the Thunder, but I think Jalen Williams also deserves a lot of praise as well. Yes, he does have a smaller usage role compared to some other players, but he is insanely efficient in that smaller role. Per Cleaning the Glass, which is a site where you can see some basketball metrics and some of these advanced stats that I use often, he's shooting 49% on all mid-rangers, which is actually a really stellar number. Mid-rangers aren't necessarily an easy shot, so shooting 49% with a bulk of that being self-created is really impressive and a really high percentile compared to other wings. And, you know, there was some noise around the trade deadline. Would the Thunder trade for a second star? And honestly, I think Jalen Williams is that second star, and maybe we'll see a later trade in the offseason, but I think the Thunder know what they have in Jalen Williams and see him as that second on-ball star. Not just with the scoring, but he provides good value across the board. Doesn't really hurt you anywhere, besides maybe blocks, but he's a guard, so I'm going to overlook that a little bit. He's a fairly low turnover player, averages solid points, decent boards, decent assists, efficiency from both field goal percentage and free throw percentage standpoint. And that's just a really nice player to have. I mean, you could argue his greatest flaw is his lack of threes, but his form has looked really comfortable hitting the step back and the pull up when he runs the pick and roll. So I think he could push that volume up a little bit. Now, there might be some future concern over usage because, as I mentioned, the Thunder have a lot of draft picks and could be inclined to make a more all-in move. However, I think Jalen Williams is really just that damn good that he is going to continue to garner the usage that he's seeing, and perhaps even more as he develops further. I don't think I can understate how impressed I've been with Jalen Williams and how he just looks like a future on-ball star. I don't think he's gotten those roses yet. You know, you see players in his draft class being praised more, but I think Jalen Williams is actually probably the best out of those and deserves a lot of praise. And just for at the point of reference, I'm working through my dynasty rankings now, but I actually moved Jalen Williams above of players like Paolo Banchero and a player we'll discuss later in Cade Cunningham, because I think he's going to see more usage going forward. He's going to be better on ball, and he is going to be the second star for the Thunder. Now, the next topic will be players in the Dallas wing, and I just mentioned one of them. That is Cade Cunningham is the first one we'll discuss. So, Cade is on one of the worst constructed teams I've ever seen and one of the worst coach teams I've ever seen. And I am a Rockets fan, and I saw the Steven Silas years. So I know what bad coaching looks like. It looks like what Monty Williams is doing on the Pistons. So that is kind of the general caveat and backdrop that needs to frame any Cade discussion. So with Cade Cunningham, he has improved his shot making, but it is still near the bottom of the league compared to other high volume players. And we're talking about players like including Paolo Banchero, Tyrese Haliburton, Damian Lillard, players like that. Cade is still well below league average. It's not as dismal as it's been in the past seasons, but it's still not really near where I would consider giving him the keys to the kingdom of my team that I would like to be a good team. Eye test wise, watching him, I still don't really think he generates lack of separation on his own. He still needs an on-ball screen for that. And because of that, I don't really think that's the sort of player that I think will develop further into an on-ball star. Also, his handle hasn't impressed me. Again, that's here's where the caveat of the team lineup constructions come in. There's so much just lack of shooting and spacing on that team that it really doesn't do him any favors when teams can pinch in from the corners and the wings and just stick their hands in there and disrupt his handle. But it's still a lot looser than I would like, and I think leads to some unnecessary turnovers. So the overall question this is here is, will he demand this level of usage going forward? I think on the Pistons, where they don't have a choice but to lean into him, he will see this level of usage, but I don't think he will necessarily develop into a player that should see that sort of usage. And there could be a fall-off coming soon at that. With less usage would come less counting stats, would come a little bit less scoring, a little bit less assist. And so you can tell me and say, well, that's just self-created aspects. He's still good off-ball, right? And I would say to you, no, he is not. He's actually shot pretty poorly this season on uncontested three-point attempts. And he has a poor team-created effective field goal percentage as well. And so is that a product of him? I mean, uncontested three-point attempts, that's usually just you. It may not be on the highest volume, but he is not shooting that well on those. And that's not really speaking highly on his off-ball ability and his ability to be a great off-ball shooter. And yeah, the talent of the team, the lack of talent, isn't going to help that. But at the same time, that's not really connected to his environment. If he's just not shooting well when players aren't guarding him, that's not exactly a thing I want in future star off-ball players. I do think his passing vision is very strong, though, and he makes high-level reads, so I don't want to rule out an assist ceiling. But with all this being said, I think this indicates the ceiling of maybe a second star, but the floor of a non-focal point wing player. I think he's still being treated as someone who just needs time in the right team environment to develop into a high usage star, but I just don't see any indications that he's performed at a level that warrants that. I'm not ruling it out completely. As I said, we've seen some improvements from him lately, but I think when we're projecting young players and prospects, we have to factor in both the width to ceiling and the floor. And I think, you know, we see them in the top 15 of rankings, dynasty rankings. I just can't put him there because for me, those are players who have shown the ability to be a high usage on-ball star in the league or are defensive monsters. And I just don't see that from Cade yet. And I can't put him in that range given where his floor can be or that he doesn't even approach that in fantasy finishes. The second player I want to talk about on the Dallas wing is Josh Giddey. And this has been a general trend over the entire season. His minutes have been shrinking. He's closing less games on a Thunder team that is trying to win games. His minutes are down from 31 last year to about 24.5 this year, which is not a good sign. You know, I like my players to show that they can be good players on good teams, and Giddey is not showing that as the Thunder have improved to be a good team. His overall usage is down as well when factoring in playmaking. He just isn't as involved. You know, granted, part of that is that the minutes are down, but the usage rates as well, which is a per minute stat, is just not as great as well. And part of the, really the whole reason why he's not involved is that his shooting hasn't improved at all, and he's really a complete black hole there. We've seen teams just be willing to go way under on screens, clog the paint when he's in the game, pretty much ignore him in the corners, and just sag in, and it's almost like his team is playing 4 and 5. And I mean, I'm not a basketball math wizard or anything, but I don't want my teams playing 4 and 5 on offense. That doesn't really sound like a winning proposition. That's really why we've seen Giddey's minutes fall off so dramatically. And that's on the offensive side. On the defensive side, I mean, he's not really doing too much, not a great ISO player, doesn't get over screens well, can be a bit lackadaisical sometimes off ball, and so he's not really helping you in the scheme that much either. Doesn't really provide rim protection. So kind of a, what are you doing for me defensively? It's not too much. So where is his role in the future going to be? I think teams in the NBA are getting better about identifying these players who can hurt you so dramatically with his lack of shooting and lack of defense that it's hard to fit him in into a good starting lineup configuration. That's not to say that he couldn't generate stats as a lead option on a bad team, but I think he's showing that he's not good enough on ball to warrant as much consideration in that department. And I just have trouble seeing him see enough minutes to really capitalize on his passing ability. The last segment we'll get into is some teams to watch. So the first team to watch is the Pistons. And yes, we are going to discuss the Pistons. I did just rag on their team and player a little bit earlier, but I still think they're an interesting team to watch because of all this youth and all these prospects and all these changes that have gone on. They were pretty active at the trade deadline. They added Simone Fontecchio and Quentin Grimes and Evan Fournier. Those are all players who, hello spacing, bring some modern NBA skill sets to the game. So the question is for me is, how will that affect Cade Cunningham, and Jaden Ivey, and Jalen Duren, who I think can all benefit from that spacing? Now, Cade, we talked about a little earlier. I think he could really benefit from that extra spacing on the court. And this, we can see, okay, how does it look in a more modern NBA environment? With Ivy, kind of the same thing there. Jaden Ivey is a quick, twitchy, athletic combo guard. And I think he does need a little bit of that spacing to help him, help open up some driving lanes for him and for him to utilize that speed. And then Jalen Duren, who you may ask, well, how is he affected by the spacing? I am actually impressed by his passing, and I think there's a lot of high post actions the Pistons could run with him, and we could see some of those passing elements on display with him either kicking out the corners or maybe even driving, passing out the corners or wings and utilizing off-ball cuts in that manner. So again, the players that they added, Simone Fontecchio, Quentin Grimes, Evan Fournier, think they have all seen some greater minutes and just add to that modern NBA rotation. Getting to the backup point guard situation, Killian Hayes was straight up waived for them. And so does Marcus Sasser fill in and show some consistency? You know, he's, since the trade deadline, he's been dealing with injuries here and there. So Malachi, it's been the Malachi and Flynn show at backup point guard. But I think Sasser should be the option they go to once he's healthy. He has shown, I think, some really good shooting and spacing so far in his career. And I think has really earned a shot. I think he can give you some points, threes, and assists. And I'm really interested to see if he can earn a consistent backup role there. Getting back to Simone Fontecchio, I just think he's a really reliable 3 and D player. He's a good movement shooter, which is a pretty big component of most modern NBA offenses, and really deserves a shot as just this kind of steady starter type, which, yes, he doesn't have the most upside in fantasy, but hey, reliable threes and some boards and some points, that will play in deeper leagues. And with Quentin Grimes, can he expand his game for more of a 3 and D player to maybe show some on-ball stuff? He has been handling the rock a little more, been involved in some more pick and roll actions with mixed results recently, but he didn't really get that opportunity in New York with a more crowded roster. So I am interested to see if he can develop that further. And lastly, we can't talk about the Pistons without talking about Oscar Thompson. Will his offensive game improve enough, really? He's been fantastic in so many areas, in his defense and his activity, his transition game. But his offense has really been a black hole and may have been even be one of the most damaging offensive players in the league. I think his cutting is smart and he is brave in his finishes, but I want to see if he can be part of a greater offensive system and not completely sink the offense when he's on the court. The second team I'm watching in the upcoming weeks is the Utah Jazz. And along with the Pistons, the Jazz made some trades that have opened up minutes for players, namely Taylor Hendricks, who we mentioned earlier. And he's been starting recently, and I think he looks pretty solid. He has brought really good energy. He's not involved in a lot of offensive actions, but I think the ones he is involved in, he's taken confidently. He's taken his threes confidently, made some good drives and finishes, and is just kind of doing what he needs to do right now, which is fine for a player of his age. I've really liked his pick and roll defense. That wasn't something we saw at the college level too much, but I think he's actually getting around screens nicely and navigating them well, which really adds to his defensive profile. We've seen his weak side rim protection show up as well. He's had some nice highlight reel blocks coming over and blocking shots for that weak side and contesting the layups or dunks. But if he can also add that pick and roll defensive versatility, that's just going to earn him more minutes going forward. Now, his pre-draft profile was a bigger 3 and D wing, maybe not a movement shooter, but someone who is respectable in the deep ball shooting department, and they could provide some rim protection as well. Kind of like a more slithery Miles Turner profile, and I think we're seeing some shades of that. So I'm excited to see him going forward and see if he can keep building upon these blocks. Another young player I've liked, Keontae George. Again, like Hendricks, he's moved into the starting lineup. And Keontae George has shown some really nice bursts off the dribble, and his passing ability has really been a change from his pre-draft profile. You know, in college at Baylor, Keontae George was mainly just kind of a gunner combo guard, but we saw as soon as in summer league that he actually had some passing ability that we just didn't see before. Now, that being said, with George, while I've liked his burst, his ability to get open, he hasn't been efficient yet, but that's just generally an issue of all young lead ball handlers. I do think he is a little too shot happy in his tendencies, but hopefully as he learns the game better, then that becomes a little more balanced. The other young player I want to touch on, Walker Kessler. Now, I do think he is one of the best rim protectors in the league, and I'm not just talking about young players, I'm talking overall. I think he is that good. However, he just hasn't really seen more minutes this year, partly because of John Collins, partly because of how Coach Will Hardy has done his lineup configurations. Is that a stamina issue? Is it because Will Hardy just favors these more five-out lineups or more shooting? It could be a combination of all of that. I honestly can't tell if it's an issue that he has specifically with Kessler or just with the players on the team. But I still think Kessler has kept up his defensive performances, so I'm interested to see if his minutes stay the same or if we kind of see him, if his minutes stay the same in the low 20s or if we can see him creep a little bit more to the high 20s. There actually is one more young player I want to touch on, and that's Bryce Sensabaugh. And he was kind of a pre-draft an efficiency self-creation beast, had really impressive numbers at the rim and the mid-range and behind the arc. So he was basically a three-level scorer, self-created scorer. However, he hasn't had the opportunity to show too much of that yet. He's only played in about 10 games this season so far in low minutes, and it's been more of an off-ball role. So I'm hoping we see some more on-ball reps. I just don't know if it's going to happen when you have players like Jordan Clarkson, Colin Sexton, all there. However, his on-ball and especially off-ball defense have looked really woeful to me. He's letting players get backdoor him on cuts for dunks. He's gotten beat at ISO numerous times, and that's kind of a big sticking point for me. If his defense doesn't improve, it might be hard for him to see minutes going forward. So, again, he's a young player. His defense was a flaw pre-draft, but maybe he just needs some reps and he can improve on that. And let's talk about Colin Sexton a little bit here. He has kind of looked like the context that we saw of old with his burst and his ability just to get into the rim, generate easy looks, and he's been pretty efficient this year and with some nice scoring numbers. That's kind of been the story of Colin Sexton. Also, the story of Colin Sexton is if he can improve his passing vision and range of passing to actually make his teammates better as well. I think he has improved a little bit on making simple reads and simple dump-offs, but we're not seeing these high-level reads where he's passing across court. They're just seeing the help sink in from the opposite side and making weak side passes, which maybe that's just not something he develops with his lack of size. But that is the next step that he would have to take to really flesh out his fantasy game more. I do feel confident saying he can be, you know, a solid six-man scoring with strong points and good efficiency. But if those assists don't come up, then that's where he maxes out as. That is still a very useful player for fantasy purposes. It's just not one that maybe I'm going to be super invested in. So that will do it for this first pod. So we got through it, allergies and all. Managed to make it through. And I'm looking forward to bringing you all more Dynasty content. I'm working right now on finalizing my rankings in the top 350, which will be up over at Sport Thesis, hopefully here in the next week or two. Other than that, see you around.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.